Because it's a membrane instrument in a big ensemble, you'd only hear it at the attack. And at the attack, that drum head is stressed because of the mallet pushing into it. So the attack comes out higher than the note rings. And if you only hear the attacks, it sounds a little better.
I don't know. I agree with the soundness of your science, but I don't know that that's actually a thing.
I don't know if it's a thing. I know that I do put in flat timpani notes.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't think I've ever done that. I think I've noticed that notes have been flat and then I've just corrected them, but I've never tried to do the A-B test and be like, does this actually sound better when it's wrong?
Which,
like,
I correct.
Cue the music!
Cue the music!
Cue the music!
Cue the music!
Coming to you live from the great indoors of New York City, I'm Brian Teo. Joining me today from Green Bay, Wisconsin is Kevin McLeod. Together, we'd like to welcome you to Composerish, where we discuss issues facing modern working composers. Sometimes. Have you ever had anybody try to dictate terms of a project? Not necessarily in terms of when things should be due or styles or anything like that, but I've had people like tell me, you know what, man, you should just enjoy the process. This should be fun for you.
No, literally no one says that to me.
I got a situation. There's somebody who was just trying to tell me, it's like, you know what, just don't worry about the deadline. You should really just enjoy it. Just enjoy the process, man. That's part of it. You should just have fun with it. I'm like, okay. Thank you. I really appreciate that, but also, like, don't tell me what to do.
I would definitely got my alarms up when I hear that from a director. And maybe they're the nicest people in the world.
I think they're trying to be, like, super accommodating, but it's almost like...
But the nicest director is not a good director.
Right. It almost makes it a little bit more difficult to work with.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're trying to be too accommodating, and they're like... I'm like, hey, what do you think? And they're like, well, what do you think? Do you think this is good? And I'm like, don't play this game. It's like, I don't know. Like, this kid. I think it's good enough that I sent it to you, but I need to know if this is along the lines of what you want. Because, I mean, we could do this a million different ways.
Right.
I'm very appreciative of the leeway that I'm getting on this, but just a little strange.
I would not be appreciative of that leeway. It's like, what is the deadline? I will move the earth if I have to hit your deadline. But you have to tell me what it is.
That was the other thing, is the deadline was actually left very, very, very open. And no. I had a bunch of other projects that had strict deadlines. So I kind of started getting to them first.
Clearly.
And then I got that dreaded prodding email being like, hey, man, haven't heard from you for a while. And it's like, yeah, okay. I mean, you're not wrong. What I should have done is created my own deadline for this if you weren't going to impose one, because you can't just lose track of it. But it also is difficult when you have like all these other deadlines that are like, oh, we need this like in 3 days or whatever,
right?
Or a week from now. It's like, of course I'm going to prioritize that, and I can be like, I need to slip this in, and then I'll have a day to work on this other project, and I should be able to get it done. Or I can say, like, I'm going to have 3 days to work on this project that's due in 3 days, and then I'll get to this afterwards. Oh, whoops, there's more deadlines that just came down the pipeline. So it's like, I feel like if somebody wants to get their project done, they can give me like a generous timeline and say like, I need this in a month or something. That's a lot of time for a short piece of music.
That is a lot of time. And then you put it on your calendar, and when it's 3 days beforehand, you do it.
Right. Exactly. Like, because I mean, we're constantly juggling a lot of plates, right? and or balls, I guess.
You know, they think plates. They're doing you a favor. Right. And there. So, by the way, this is a lesson for all of you hiring composers. You're not doing them a favor by just saying, you know, do what you like. No, deadlines. Deadlines are real. We like them. You like deadlines? I like deadlines. We're both composers. Composers like deadlines. I believe we can say this solidly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When I first started writing, I thought that there was a little bit too limiting. Like, I didn't like having to stick to a deadline because I'd never really had to do it before. Mm. When, you know, like when I came out of college, it was just kind of like, yeah, do things as you can. And you'd have assignments. But like when it came to like really writing, it was just kind of like you do it as you can, which meant I didn't really produce a lot.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I was talking to somebody else about the freelance life where it's like, there's always work to be done. And people are like, so when are you going to be done? I'm like, do you mean today?
there's no end.
Because the answer is really like never. I mean, I can continue working forever, and it's really hard to know exactly when I'm supposed to stop.
Yeah.
Like, because it's just, there's tons of stuff to always do. So I have to like try to schedule in time that I can have as downtime, because otherwise I'm just going to go crazy. Like, you know what? I'm going to stop at like 2 a.m. or something, and I'm going to watch this show, or I watch an episode of this thing, or watch a YouTube video, or whatever. But you have to create that sense of downtime. And deadlines kind of help with that, because I know then as long as I've hit my deadlines, and if the next deadlines are far enough in the future, then I can take downtime.
Well, here's the other thing. People think like, oh, well, if I give them all the time in the world, I will get a better product. You know, if they enjoy the work and then I let them do it at their own pace, I will get a better product. Nope, you will not.
That's probably the way that it works if you're dealing with somebody who doesn't do this for a living. Like, I mean, if it's a hobby, they're only working on this one piece of music.
Right.
And they don't really do a whole lot else. So it's like, yeah, they can put all their time and effort and really explore and get this to sound good. But I mean, if somebody does this day in and day out, giving an infinite deadline is not going to make it better. In fact, it's probably going to make it worse.
It will never make it
better. One of the benefits of like jumping into like having to deal with schedules and stuff is that it doesn't give you the time to be super precious about musical ideas.
Yeah.
You just have to like, all right, I have a bunch of stuff that I need to get done in the next week. So I can't dilly-dally around with trying to find the melody that feels right. You write down a couple ideas and sketches, find the best one, and then you just work with it. But in the process of working with it, all of a sudden you bring in like all these devices and tricks and tools that you have in your back pocket.
Yeah.
And you can make an idea that was kind of like meh. And then all of a sudden, like through your craft, you can actually make it good.
Yeah, I can. Yep, done. Deadlines. Give your people some deadlines. It works. I swear to God, don't ask them to follow their heart.
And if they don't give you a deadline, you should probably just make one yourself.
Right.
Because otherwise, it's just never going to get done.
Even if you're commissioning a piece for free, have a deadline or it will not get done. I did two pieces of music this morning.
Two. Wow.
Yeah. I was working on a big project and I was in between revisions and like waiting for a thing back. And I was like just itching to make more music. And somebody came through. It's like, hey, you don't have a lot of like Japanese music on your site. Do you have any Japanese music? I'm like, I don't know. And then I like research Japanese music and then you realize there's a lot of Japanese music. And so then I'm like email back like, what do you think Japanese music is? Like, do you have any?
Yeah. I mean, like, are they talking like traditional like sakura or like are they talking about like anime, like rock and roll? I mean, Japanese can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
So what I got back was three links to videos, two of which were Chinese. So like I got this. Like, no problemo.
So racist Japanese music.
Kodo. Kodo and taiko drumming, they're real hard for us Westerners to tell them apart.
Yeah, I mean, one is a string instrument and one is a drum, so I feel like you could probably tell them apart that way.
Kodo drummer and taiko drummer, they're both big drums. They both come from roughly What?
Am I...
Kodo. C-O-D-O.
No, I'm thinking of K-O-T-O.
Oh, K-O-D-O, I
K-O-T-O.
Think. K-O-T-O. Koto is a stringed instrument.
Yes. Yeah. It's like a... the Japan or the Chinese have the guqian, I think.
The guqian. Yeah.
But the koto is like their. It's almost like a horizontal harp kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That not that. They meant the big drums. They meant the big drums with the big sticks and the 15 very 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 fit drummers.
Taiko. Yes. I mean, what is this? The koto drums.
Koto. Koto. I think it was koto.
How do you spell that?
I don't remember. I didn't look at the email. K-O-D-O? You want me to look it up?
We need to find this out because I don't want to put it.
Let's put a pin on it and let me go look.
Oh, the name. Yes. There's Kodo, which is the name of a taiko drum ensemble, which is kind of confusing, I guess.
All right. We figured it out.
As far as I know, this is based on less than a minute of Googling. So
yes, which is all that I did in order to like, all right, what are the standard drum things? And my drum things got a little polyrhythmic and theirs don't.
Yeah.
But it has the same sound.
This is a question I don't think that we're actually going to get into any real answers about this because it's a very sensitive topic and you can just tell me to stop if this is like problematic.
Okay.
There's a lot of discussion these days about characters who are in like animation, let's say people of color.
Yes.
And there have been a bunch of actors who have come out recently who were not people of color or at least not the person of color that they were representing in the show who have either like dropped out and apologized or people have called for other people to be canceled and et cetera. In music, we oftentimes have to write styles of music that we don't completely understand. And this Correct. Has to do with everything, including music that has like a proud, rich cultural history of a certain peoples, or sometimes it's just genres we don't really get. So like you were talking before about having to write like hip hop
yeah.
or trap beats,
right.
which is, I think I can comfortably say is not really your wheelhouse. Am I correct?
No, they've done well.
Right. But I mean, it's not like something that you've spent a lot of time listening to and researching. Like you've listened to it enough to be able to get it.
Right.
Which is kind of like, this is what we do. I mean, we've studied yeah. music theory and we understand sound and sound design enough that we can kind of like listen to stuff, get the yep. gist, and then we can kind of like recreate it. So when people say yeah. like, what do? What kind of music do you make? It's like, well, what do you need?
Like I make music. What are you talking about? They think we have a thing to say. It's like, no. I will make you say a thing. What, however you want to do that.
Right. In the case of scoring, especially, it's like, I don't need to impose my vision onto your project.
No.
I can tell you like when I'm watching your thing, what I think will work well. But at the end of the day, I need to know what your vision is as well. So we can kind of like collaborate, but I'm not just going to write like pieces of music about my life. I'm not going to like just say, like, oh, this is a song about the last time that I moved apartments. And this is a song about my last breakup. All these singer-songwritery things, which are great songs and great, you know, subject materials for pieces of music potentially, doesn't really make a great score because it's like it's too much about you. It's not about the story. So our right. job is to try like to know enough about music that we can employ all these devices to like capture that emotion. That said, there's like these uncomfortable areas where we breach sometimes where like we're asked to create styles of music or yeah. capture the feeling of a setting. And it might call for things like, let's say steel pan drumming
yes.
or Latin jazz or these things. It's like, well, through jazz, I've studied some Latin jazz. I'm not going to say I've done like a deep dive. I've played guitar in like Latin jazz ensembles and I've had to do a decent amount of listening to Latin jazz and understand like rhythms and all that. And that's a really deep topic.
It is. And you're way deeper than I am.
But I mean, that's not to say like there's a lot of people that cover it. Like you get a wide shot of this person on vacation and you hear that do, 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 do on the steel pan or whatever. with like, and then like in like a bass line, just kind of like walking like doom, 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 doom. And you get the sense of where they are.
Yeah.
Because you have these instruments that are like societal cues. However, it's probably not super authentically whatever culture that you're trying to paint.
No.
And this is kind of like why a lot of exotic type music, quote unquote, exotic music from like the 1950s and 1960s when they were like doing like tiki bar stuff. It's not really like music from any specific area. They were just like imagining
yeah.
what sorts of things would come out of like the jungle.
Yeah.
The jungle. Like with a lowercase T and a lowercase J. It's like the jungle. And it was like this mishmash of things that didn't really fit into Caucasian culture that seemed exotic. That's what they would draw from. And it's become problematic now that we're looking back. We're like, okay, what are you doing? You have like, you're taking like costumes that are kind of inspired by like, you know, Brazilian tribes and kind of inspired by like African tribes and also just like these things that are created by humans, like banana leaf skirts and whatever.
right.
And then you have like this harp for like out of nowhere, just like glissandoing as part of this island ensemble or whatever. It's not actually on screen, but you hear it and it's like, yeah. what is this? It's not accurate. So there's that part of it, which is like, yeah, it's not accurate. I can understand why it's disrespectful, but also like as composers, we're kind of like meant to create this sense of like fantasy, I guess. I don't know what the word is.
Yeah.
Like, how do we approach this? What's the best, how do we do this sensitively?
Well, oh God. So if we,
you know where I'm going with this?
Roughly. And I think you're talking about Rameau.
What's that?
The composer back in the day.
Oh, Rameau.
Rameau.
Yeah, as in the Baroque composer.
He did some opera-y stuff. He did some about, like, you know, the Indians and the New World. And it's funny now, but, like, it was exotic and interesting back then because they didn't have any fucking clue. They had no fucking clue. Dvorak did some he didn't know much about, like, In order to really write music in a culture, I think you need to speak the language. If you understand Chinese, you'll have a much higher chance of making music that works for a Chinese speaking audience.
Yeah.
I've gotten requests to do Vietnamese folk music. And, you know, so I've analyzed too much Vietnamese folk music.
I have like one vinyl record I think that I found in a shop at one point that I was like, oh, I don't have any Vietnamese music, so I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
I have not studied it enough to be able to tell the difference between like Vietnamese folk music and Thai folk music, let's say.
Right. I can't tell the difference between the languages either.
Right. And I mean, like, this is like a thing though. I mean, so like part of me says that, like, respectfully, for the style of music, like, you probably should require somebody to do some deep diving in order to like get a sense of that. But also, so much of our music is created out of facsimiles. There are a lot of types of music that come out of, like, let's say, like symphonic traditions, which one could argue is very much like a white European tradition. Although there are lots of examples of like people of color who have written in this style. But I mean, by and large, that's where it comes from. It's like this lineage. And there are people, myself often included, who will write for like these large ensembles, and I don't necessarily know what I'm doing. And most of the time, I'm like,
God damn it.
I've studied it.
You're not
it.
Tchaikovsky. I get that. But what do you mean you don't know what you're doing? You know what you're doing.
I've studied orchestration.
Yes.
I've studied harmony and counterpoint and all these things that come out of that world. But like, if we're going to say, like, I mean, now we're like getting into this area of like splitting hairs. Do I really know how to write Baroque music? Do I really know how to write 18th century large ensemble music? Do I really know how to write 19th century large ensemble music? And like, all these things kind of get like mishmashed together because it's through the filter of like how I hear it. I am notoriously bad with knowing very famous examples of music. Like, people were like, oh yeah, you know, Eroica, right? And I'm like, I mean, I'm aware that that's a piece of music.
Can I hum a few bars? I don't think so.
No, I can't.
Yeah.
There are composers who know these pieces inside and out.
Yeah.
You could just give them a piece of manuscript paper and they could probably start like kind of shorthand scoring out like major chunks of it. If not, like, there are people that I'm sure there are insane people who know the whole thing backwards and forwards, and and they know that style of music. And there are other people that can do the same with a bunch of other styles. There are pieces like pop music that I've got like ingrained in my head. And as much as I don't know the individual notes, if I think about it, I could probably sit down and write out every single part just because I've listened to them so much more often than I have, like, from these big, very famous classical pieces. Like, Beethoven's Fifth, I know, like, the broad strokes, but if you ask me what are the horns doing in this, like, you know, the second movement, I'm like, I don't know. I haven't listened to it that deeply. So I'm babbling on in an effort to qualify my actual question. Knowing something about a culture before attempting to write music influenced by it is a part of respecting it. But I guess my question is, how much do you need to know? There's no real answer to this. And I don't want to come up with an answer and say that this is right or wrong, because
the answer is, consider your audience. This is the answer. If you're writing for a Vietnamese audience and they're looking for things that they heard in their childhood, you better fucking research the shit out of that.
Oh, yeah.
If you're writing for a Japanese audience and you need to get Vietnamese across, now we need to do like a differentiation. What's the difference between the Japanese music of that era and the Vietnamese music of that era? And we need to make it sound distinctly different from the Japanese. It's just about the audience. That's what I'm saying.
I guess what we're trying to say is, I don't want to be disrespectful with anything that I do, but so much of the type of music that I create is just me kind of flying by the seat of my pants.
Yeah.
And I am oftentimes not super faithful to that genre, but I'm close enough that people listening can get it. And this has to do with everything from like things that are very much Western traditions, as well as things that are abroad. It is less problematic when it's things that are Western traditions. I'm not trying to ask if this is right or wrong. This is going to be an ongoing dialogue.
I think this is another nail in the coffin for why deadlines are good. Because no matter what happens, you can just say, it's like, well, I had a 3-day deadline, man. I can't research all traditions.
like what we do, please do us a favor by going to the Apple Podcast app and subscribing to Composerish. There's the rhetoric and like voice acting and like portraying people of color and et cetera in the animation world is a thing that people are talking about now.
Yeah.
And I think that music is going to also be a thing that people talk about.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what to think. It's just a thing that I kind of think about a lot. Like
Right. And like, I can't imagine that music is being used to harm people, but clearly it is.
If I had to only write the types of music that I was actually an expert at, I would write nothing. Because there's nothing that I'm really like.
This is your problem.
Well, because we're like, you know, I'd have to determine what is it that I do and how can I prove that I actually know this thing. And I, as a biracial person, I don't feel comfortable tying that to my own heritage.
Oh, you don't have any heritages. Is that what you're saying? You're biracial and you get none of the benefits?
No, well, I don't because, I mean, I don't identify with them. I'm like Eastern European and Chinese. Like hard Chinese.
Yeah.
And I don't identify as being Eastern European or Chinese. I don't know either of those cultures. I was born in America, which is this great melting pot.
Yeah.
And I have all these influences and there's stuff that I listen to and I love it. And I sometimes try to emulate it.
Yeah.
I don't think that I'm not saying that I'm creating an accurate representation of what this style of music is. It's just like, this is just me loving these sounds and using them in different ways. Like, and that's about where I'm at.
Solid.
I'm open to criticism and discussion. And honestly, I just want to know. So this is kind of where, I guess where we're going to have to like leave this topic is just saying that like, you know, I think like we are both people who are interested in discussion and argument. And I'd love to hear all sides of the story and understand.
Yeah. However, if you make something that sounds cool, make something that sounds cool.
That's it.
Palate cleanser.
Kevin, you are a person that has done a lot of marketing on YouTube, right?
I have been the recipient of a lot of marketing on YouTube, yes.
A lot of your engagement for pieces comes from YouTube.
It absolutely does. It comes from a dude who is not me, who is making a lot of money on me.
Interesting.
Eric Archive.
His last name is really Archive?
I don't know. That's the name of the channel.
Oh.
He has basically royalty-free music. It's for me and dozens of other sources. And he just takes the pieces and he makes them available on YouTube. And he gets millions and millions of views. And I pay him nothing. I think we corresponded over email once, but he may be more rich than I am.
You think so?
It's looking at the numbers. He's pulling in more money. Yeah.
Hmm.
You need to have all of your stuff on YouTube. It needs to be available. After it's available, you don't need to do anything. You just need to make sure it's there. When people search for it, can they find it? That's the only thing you need to care about on YouTube right now. You're not breaking through. You're not going to be the next Justin Bieber. That's not how it works anymore. All you need to be is there.
And the idea of being able to become like a new YouTube influencer or whatever they call themselves, the new YouTube star, that's also like a thing that's like,
that's gone.
If not impossible, it is extraordinarily difficult.
Even if you're the best in the segment, you have no chance. YouTube doesn't do that, which is why TikTok became so popular, because TikTok people can become popular in one video.
But I guess like what I'm trying to ask right now is, as a composer, if you want to use YouTube purely as a promotional item and not as like a moneymaker in and of itself, what are some actionable things that people can do?
Get all of your music onto YouTube. Get all of your music on there. Everything that you have recordings of, make videos of it, take pictures, steal them from Pixabay. I don't care. Just get there. It's like getting listed in the Yellow Pages. Honestly, you got to be listed in order for somebody to call you. You got to be on YouTube in order for somebody to understand, like, cause they just want to know. It's like, they're not going to steal your shit. Trust me. They'll steal easier shit.
Like, I don't know if that's ever really concerned these days. I mean,
oh,
if
it you're is. Gonna,
in order to put stuff out, period, in order for the world to hear it, you kind of have to get it out digitally, which means there's always a chance that somebody can steal your stuff. You're just saying you all you have to do is put it up on YouTube. Is yes. there anything to be said for descriptive titles or track descriptions or tags no. or any of that kind of stuff?
No, you don't have to buy ads to get people to go there. You don't have to do anything. Just you have to be there. You have to be there.
All right.
That's where everyone goes. That's where I go. That's where everyone goes.
Well, it looks like this Eric Archive person basically just has like a blank background. It's like a yep. periwinkle color and your name and the title of the piece and a link to your website.
And yet they're distinctive. And when I go searching for my music, if I see an Eric Archive link, I will click on it because I know he's got it and he's got the best one.
He's got a better one than you do?
Yeah, because I didn't put up all of my stuff. He put up all of my stuff.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, like, do you think that the visual component is a part of putting things on things like Instagram or YouTube?
Nope. Hasn't worked for me at all. I would put zero effort into that.
You have, though. I mean, I've seen videos of your dancing cursors.
Yes.
I've seen videos of like audio reactive stuff yeah. in your videos. Yep. You seem to select pictures that are kind yeah. of...
Recently, I've been building Lego dioramas and taking pictures of those. There's really no reason to do it. Just needs to be there. And after that, put your effort into music. Put your effort into listening. Put it into something else. Don't spend any once it's there, don't spend any time on anything else.
How do you drive people to your YouTube site, first of all? Because, I mean, I think like you have to build an audience and people have to be able yeah. to find it and care and subscribe to you. And yeah. then also, how do you convert those people from being like hearing your stuff on YouTube towards like visiting your site?
I trust in Google is how I do it. Like, if you want to know, you can Google me and you will get to my website very quickly.
So this is very Underpants Nomi in the style
very
of Kevin
Underpants
McCloud.
Nomi.
Where like you're just, you know, step one, put it on YouTube.
Put it on YouTube. Don't care how.
Step two. Step three, profit.
Yes, however shitty it is, it doesn't matter as long as it's there.
Okay, so YouTube is essential for driving people to your website.
Absolutely.
You just put stuff on YouTube.
Yep.
And that's it.
That is it.
All right.
Don't care about how good it is. Don't spend money on things. Don't have to do mastering things. None of this matters.
So that's the hot tip.
That is the hot tip.
I had done a chiptune cover of Nothing Compares to You by Prince, made famous by Sinead O'Connor. And for it, I had rotoscoped an entire music video, basically meaning I traced Oof. Frames of a video by hand and like reanimated this thing. And I thought it was going to be huge. I thought it was going to blow up and be viral. And people were going to watch and be like, wow, this is amazing. It looks really great. It's cool because it's got like this handmade.
It does look really good, by the way. I've seen
and
it.
And nobody has watched it. And I spent months tracing frames of this video by hand.
I was going to say, what are you, Brian? Are you an animator?
I am definitely not an animator, but I did this because I cared and I thought that this is going to make a difference. And, you know, there's nothing more disheartening than spending that much time on something and having like 13 people watch it and be like, oh, that was cool. Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, all right. Thank you for listening. And thank you for listening.
Cue the outro!
Cue the outro! I'd like to thank everyone for listening. If you have any comments or suggestions of things you'd like to hear us babble on about, please feel free to contact us at composerish@gmail.com. Until next time, keep on writing.